Welcome to the GuffMen. Just before we get started, I want to do a quick couple things that we kind of do every week and just tell you to check out our website, themcguffmen.com. It's got a lot of video podcasts, other audio podcasts. This week we're going to have a new video podcast out about the Social Network, but last time we did a video podcast about Michael Bay. Last week we had an audio episode on Pixar's new movie Brave, and we also write some pop culture criticism, so you can check that out. We've been told all of the things on our website are very good for killing time at work. So, and I've got James with me. Hi, James.
Hello.
People in suspense. We've also got our Twitter account at the MacGuffin Men, all one word, no underscores. So follow us there. We've got an interesting topic today. I'm intrigued to talk about it, but something even more interesting happened recently. James, Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes broke up.
I know.
How are we feeling about this news?
I'm emotionally devastated.
Yeah.
My grief counselor says I'm also going through some physical devastation, but we'll get there.
Okay. Well, yeah, anything you need to help you through this tough time, just let me or the viewers know, or listeners know, we're here for you, James.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The only reason I'm mentioning this is because I find it really interesting that all of Tom Cruise's marriages have ended when his wife is 33.
Is that true?
That's for real.
You're not just being glib?
No, I'm not. Nice. No, I'm not just being glib. All of his marriages have ended at 33, when his wife is 33. Sorry. So yeah, maybe that's some sort of Scientology thing that we just don't know about yet.
So now he has to date someone younger until they're 33?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work, but we'll see what happens. But anyways, that's not here what we're here to talk about.
No, we're not.
Just before we get to the theme song, a little hint. How many times do you think we're going to get bitch said throughout this podcast?
I'm going to try to restrain myself.
Okay.
Well, 33.
Okay. Well, we've definitely got one for sure, and another one coming up momentarily, so let's get to the theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Breaking Bad, bitch. And now, here are Alex and James.
So welcome to MacGuffin Men, and what are we talking about here today, James?
Well, today we're going slightly outside of our normal realm and talking about a television show instead of a movie.
Ooh, spicy.
From the big screen to the small screen.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Breaking Bad.
Ooh, okay, cool.
Can you hear the excitement in my voice already?
Yes.
Can you hear the lack of excitement in yours?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm mostly just confused because I thought we were talking about Romeo and Juliet today.
What?
It's a animated Romeo and Juliet movie for kids from like 3 years ago, starring a gnome.
I know that.
Well, oh, okay. Well, so I'm not the only one that's researched our topic today.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I'm as far as Breaking Bad goes, I'm more or less ambivalent towards our topic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's a show that gets a lot of ambivalence from other people. Well, I mean, people like the show and get really excited about it, but I think it's kind of in a moral gray area for some people.
Yeah.
For the ethical boundaries of it. So we'll get to that, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's also not like a particularly, I mean, the people that know it are people like us. This is not a show with a lot of viewers comparatively. Yeah. You know?
No, I guess not. I mean, it's on the same, same channel as Mad Men, and it's certainly the lesser known, lesser appreciated one.
Yeah.
But it has some critical love.
Oh yeah, definitely. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And Breaking Bad, when Breaking Bad tops 2 million viewers, that's like a big thing for it.
Yeah. So. But critical love, as we said, and some awards love, especially for B. Cran himself.
Yep, Bryan Cranston.
B. Cran.
Yeah, well, I'm just giving them the establishing shot of B. Cran. You know?
Okay. He shall henceforth be known as B. Cran.
Okay.
Or the Cranny B.
Okay.
Either way, I will accept both.
Okay.
There's kind of something rewarding about seeing an actor that's been around this long make it to this level, right?
Yes. Yes.
And do you like Bryan Cranston?
I do. I like him as an actor. I don't like as a person. I find him kind of annoying.
Oh, really?
Like in interviews and stuff, I find him very annoying. But
why?
He always sort of sounds like particularly like I listened to a panel of him, Vince Gilligan, and Aaron Paul, who plays Jesse on Breaking Bad, and Vince Gilligan is the creator of Breaking Bad. And Bryan Cranston just really always felt like the dad who is always trying to be funny, even though he knows he's not. But that doesn't that doesn't forgive him for just like stomping over things that other people are saying just so he can say his bad dad joke. You know what I mean?
Maybe he was deep in character as Hal from Malcolm.
Okay, fair enough. And I mean, like in solo interviews as well. Like I listened to his WTF with Marc Maron a while back, and he's just sort of very actory in the way he talks about things, and that's never a way to get to my heart, really.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do think he's a good actor. I think he's very good in this show, in a role that it requires a lot of jumping around emotionally and all that.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of want to talk about this show versus The Wire, just because they're both, you know, highly regarded shows critically and dealing with drugs and the drug trade. And he's just so much more important to this show than anybody is to The Wire. Like, this is very much Walter White's show, as much as there are other characters. If this show didn't have a good lead, it would really be hurting because so much is built up on him, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like this is all about him. And what is it? Did he get 3 in a row for best actor?
I think so. And then I don't think he won for season 4, but he was nominated.
Okay. And I thought there was one where they didn't make it in time. Like they hadn't aired enough episodes during the window or something.
Well, I don't know that. Because I never know how the Emmys work. I always find them totally perplexing. But yeah, maybe that was season 4 that I'm thinking of or something.
Yeah, because I think there was one that he didn't win, but it wasn't because they didn't think he was good enough.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Yeah, so as I said, like, this show is really all about Walt, and it's his whole journey. I mean, he gets cancer very early, and then it's really him dealing with, you know, trying to get money for his family to survive after he's gone.
Yeah.
And Vince Gilligan, as you said, the creator of this. Yeah, I mean, it's all about Walt, and Vince Gilligan said that this is the transition from, like, we're going to watch this character transition. And that was, it's a word he talks about over and over. And when you hear him talk about this whole show in general, he says it's very much about this journey that Walt's taking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said it's, what was it? Mr. Chips turning into Scarface.
That's right.
So we get, you know, kind of an old good man. I mean, in that first episode, we see that he's a very passionate and intelligent and good teacher, appears to be very good to his wife and his kids. A very all around good guy,
mm-hmm.
Just the classic put into a bad situation. And, you know, as a product of his situation, he turns a little bit more evil.
Yeah.
Do you see this transition? Like, do you think that really shows up on the screen? Like, is he a very good guy at the start of this series and a morally bad person by the end? Like, do you see that? Or do you think he is just a good guy in a tough situation and he does some bad things, but they're all lesser of two evils? Or do you actually see him turning evil?
Like,
there's no doubt he does criminal things. That's, you know, that's not a question. But really, do you think he's ever just a bad guy to be a bad guy?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay, like what?
I think, like, the thing that's really interesting about Breaking Bad and talking to people about Breaking Bad is the moment when a certain viewer feels like Walt breaks bad. Like, when he's, like, you just don't like Walter anymore. Because I fucking hate Walter. Like, okay. If he dies in the season 5 premiere, cool. You know, like, I just...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just, like, I find him more, like, a morally reprehensible person. And, like, that was starting to build. And for me, personally, when he lets Jane die, that's just, like, that's the worst. And I got really angry watching that. And it's just sort of, like, I've never cared about Walt since then. Like, I still watch the show because I do find it entertaining. But, like, I don't care about Walt at all. Okay. And I don't mean that to say I'm not interested in his character's arc, but emotionally, I have no investment in him.
Okay. When you say you've talked to other people, is that kind of the turning point for most people, is Jane's death? Or?
See, the thing that confuses me about talking to other people is that there isn't a turning point for most people.
Yeah, and like,
Yeah, and I thought, for me, like, I thought that was sort of, that would be a comparatively earlier moment, because I wasn't as quickly sold on Breaking Bad as most other viewers are. But, like, I expected somewhere along the lines, like him poisoning a kid, people thinking that's bad, you know, or even something, you getting Gale killed so that, to save his life or whatever. But,
yeah.
Because there are so many opportunities for you to feel like this guy is an objectively bad person. And I'm always surprised at how few people are still, like, sort of emotion, or how many people are still emotionally attached to him, like, even now.
And yeah,
it's weird to me.
Yeah, and I was, like, I listened to a lot of the interviews with Vince Gilligan, and
who has an awesome voice, we should point out.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. The Villigan.
Is that what that's called?
No, but that's what he's called.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah,
his own celebrity couple name. But
okay. He's got like a good Virginia accent going on or something.
Yeah. But he really, again, with this transition thing, like, he really is, the way he talks about it is that Walt is, you know, taking baby steps, just getting worse and worse and worse until you can't like him anymore. And I agree with you partially that Jane's death is the least defensible thing he does.
It's horrible,
and it's gross to watch, because it's someone just choking on their own vomit slowly. Yeah. And dying. Yeah. But yeah, just the empirical facts of what happened, like, it's morally just...
And that you see him like, oh, I could stop this right now, like, you see on his face the decision to let her die.
Yeah.
And that's so brutal to me.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, well, anyway, I'll finish my point. No,
okay.
Sorry. No, it's fine. Yeah, that to me, I think, is worse. And I don't feel like it's all a perfect downhill slope. To me, him poisoning that kid, you know, not a nice thing to do, but way more defensible than letting Jane die.
I agree.
Like, he doesn't kill the kid. He poisons the kid's sick for what, like 12, 24 hours? I mean, unpleasant, but... in the grand scheme of things, Jane's death, I'd say, is much worse.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing, and I've gotten to some arguments about people in Jane's death, and again, I don't like it. I think it's pretty bad, and I do think it is probably the worst thing he does, or, you know, fails to do. But she kills herself. If he's not there, she dies anyway.
Doesn't he knock her out of the recovery position, though?
Oh, that's probably it, eh?
Yeah. I think it's sort of like he knocks her out of the position that would, you know, recovery position is like you lie on your side so that if you vomit in your sleep, you don't choke on it.
Yeah.
I think he knocks her out of it, and then as she starts to vomit, doesn't turn her back.
All right.
Defend that, Jim.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah, well, yeah. I do really love that idea, though, of even separate from its execution, to really take the protagonist that we start off loving and make him the bad guy. And I don't know a show or a movie that does it really that well.
No, I agree entirely.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's unique about this show, at least its intentions. And I guess we'll see in season 5 how far he really goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what we need to see is him do something that is so separate from, you know, what he's going through and what he's trying to do for his family. Because, you know, everything, like with Jane's death, for example, and I've, you know, been in both sides of this argument about whether it was really, really bad or it was kind of her fault. And you can always say that, you know, these are other people's choices. He's just kind of involved tangentially. And what he's doing is still for his family. Like, he didn't stay around to help her because he had to get those drugs to make the drug deal to get the money for his family. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think anyone agrees that he got into this for good reasons, or maybe not good reasons, but, you know, morally neutral reasons.
Yeah.
To save his family.
Yeah.
But I think what we need to see to really turn people on him, like 100% to where you can't defend him anymore, is for him to do something just completely separate from this, for him to kill someone that doesn't help him at all, just, you know, to be a nefarious bad guy.
I think it might even have to be like, I think he just has to, the only way that at this point people will turn is if he just walks up to Jesse out of the blue and shoots him in the head.
Like, yeah,
that's the only thing I think will turn people, because Jesse is the only other likable character on this show. Unless maybe, you know, like Walt chokes out Walter Jr. or something, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Puts ricin in his cereal or something.
Yes. Waiting for the first breakfast joke.
Yeah.
There you are, listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Jesse's journey is really interesting, too, because he starts in a place of, you know, trying to be a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Like, when we meet him, he wants to be a little gangbanger drug dealer. Mm-hmm. He isn't killing people yet, but you get the feeling that he kind of wishes he was, in a way. And we see him kind of get what he asks for, but emotionally and morally kind of rejecting what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think he kind of is going in a different way from Walter, even when they're both doing horrible things. Like, I feel like we see Walt kind of getting more and more into it, and mm-hmm. Jesse, who kind of started into it, being less and less interested in the idea of actually shooting someone in the head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just in general, I enjoy, like, I like Jesse better as a character, and I find him, I think, equally interesting as Walt.
Yeah, what do you like about Jesse? Because I'm a huge fan of Jesse. Like,
yes.
I think it's better the way that it works with Walt as, you know, the star of the show.
Yeah.
I think we leaned on Jesse really hard. I might get sick of him or just not like him as much. So he is a very good secondary character. But what do you like about him in particular?
Well, the one thing, and I mean, it's just something that just works for me, and I suppose you as well. It's just sort of like, you know, like, we both went to high school with a person like Jesse. You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah.
I know exactly who it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I know somebody who's like Jesse later in life, not like the drug dealing, but I've had friends that have dealt with substance issues and stuff like that. And I find that aspect of his character really interesting, him trying to get over his addictions. And I think one of my favorite episodes in the series is in, I think it's like episode 4 or something, when Jesse goes home to see his parents and then yeah. gets kicked out of the house. I think that's one of the best, most interesting shows episodes the show did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find him, just because he's more of a person than Walt is, you know, like, at this point, Walt is just this like evil force, you know? Whereas Jesse still feels like a human being to me.
Yeah.
And like, he really struggles with killing somebody when he has to kill Gale, and they like give it weight. Like, he's still a human, like, just the way it's shot. No pun intended. I don't know. Like, you can really see Jesse struggling with it before and after. Like, he never wants to kill somebody. Not that Walt does, but Walt is more at ease with doing it, I think.
Yeah.
The first time he does.
You're right. I mean, for how much screen time he gets, I think he's a much more rounded out character than Walt is.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, part of Walter's thing is just that he's unpredictable and not rounded out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he has to act irrationally to be this irrational, crazy person.
Yeah. And I don't know, Jesse's got, like, he likes kids. Like, you can sense that all the time. And he gets those the romantic relationships that, I guess, help round him out a little bit.
Yep.
That second one's a little bit forced with the
yeah.
former addict with the kid.
Yep.
But, normally I like it. And he's got his artistic side and things like that. Like, he just seems like a rounded out, nice dude.
And, yeah. And that's why, like, when he starts, I don't know. When he gets Jane back into drugs, I get really upset, but whatever. Yeah.
When they go to the Narcotics Anonymous meetings to start selling drugs.
Yeah. Again. Yeah.
At the pretty low point.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
For me. Villigan said that he had oh, that's going to be nonstop.
Okay. Just making sure.
Egrad and Villigan.
Yeah.
He said that he intended to kill Jesse off really early on, like first season.
Yep.
How much of a mistake would that have been?
Well, I mean, this isn't a show that, like, Gilligan's upfront about he doesn't always have, like, an end plan and all that stuff. Like, he's willing to roll with the punches. So, I mean, given how much the show must have done it over the course of 4 seasons, it could have dealt without Jesse. It would be a totally different show. I don't think it's objectively better or worse without him. But I mean, if we are to like some alternate universe where this show exists with Jesse and then also with Jesse dead, I feel like the dead Jesse is worse, unless they sort of find, they would probably try and still find a counterpart for Walt, though.
Yeah.
They just sort of have to come from a different place.
Yeah. One thing I think about keeping Jesse around is, as you said earlier, this is someone Walt can kill. Like, this is a big player that's been around since the beginning. I can't see him killing anybody in his family, even Hank, who's, you know, an in-law.
Yeah.
So I think Jesse provides someone who, you know, it is his counterpart, but it's also his adversary often. And, you know, those are always good relationships, the ones that go back and forth like that. And yeah, there's this very important character that we know really well that season 5, they might, you know, butt heads a lot more. And yeah, he's also just someone that might be killed, and that's going to have a lot of weight to it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if it's a situation where, you know, they're 50-50 business partners and Walt just wants his, you know, both 50%, you know, as you said, him killing Jesse just purely out of a greed reason would really, I think, you know, be that transition that Vince Gilligan wants.
Yeah.
To really drive the fact home that it's okay, now he's just acting out of greed and he is bad enough to do this to someone he has known for a long time and we'll just kill him anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, now that Jesse can sort of, is good enough at making the Heisenberg meth that he can operate, you know, in theory by himself. You know, I think that is an interesting setup for season 5 right there.
Yeah, and season 4 we saw, I mean, they always had their little quibbles and stuff and kind of a teacher student father son kind of way, but yeah, it looks like now they're, you know, as you said, when he's got the recipe, now they're getting on equal footing and can really go head to head as, you know, peers.
Yep.
Yeah. The thing about the transition too is, I mean, people always talk about likable characters and they say, oh, I couldn't get into that show, I just didn't like anybody on it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you watch a show with a protagonist you don't like an anti-hero star of a show? Is it like,
yes,
you can't?
I am living proof. yeah, because like, I mean, here's my experience with Breaking Bad. I never loved it. I think it's a show that's more fun to think about than it is to watch. And I think the reason I kept watching, I do enjoy watching it. I don't think it's as great as a lot of people do think, but I think the things that Breaking Bad does well, it does better than any television show ever has. And that's why I sort of keep watching it. And that's mostly the tension aspects. And I do like Jesse. Pretty much every other character on the show, I don't like at all. And I even like struggle with Jesse sometimes. But you know, it's just like, if you do everything, I don't know, if you set up sort of this world that everybody is unlikable in, then maybe somehow by default people will like somebody, you know? And I think that's what Breaking Bad does, because this is an unlikable protagonist. I don't know. How can somebody justify Walt as being a likable protagonist?
I guess the argument is that he's willing to do anything for his family.
Yeah.
And even if, I mean, and you can say, oh, but he's doing immoral things. And I guess the argument is like, well, that's kind of, in a weird way, the nicest thing you can do for someone is, mm-hmm, do something that you think is horrible, to really sacrifice your own morality. And I know it's a bit twisted, but for him to totally just take himself out of the equation and, you know, separate himself from, oh, this is what I want to do, this is what's good, this is what should be done, for him to think of the safety and comfort and health of his family above anything else and do whatever needs to be done.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's a little dark, but I don't think he enjoys killing people, but he's willing to do it for someone else.
Okay. I think that reasoning only gets so far, though. I feel like there's a point pretty early on in the show where he can get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And there's like a decided turn. I think it's probably, and I mean, you know the show better than I do, so point it out if I'm incorrect, but I feel like before he, before he starts cooking for Gus, I feel like there is a definite out. Like his cancer's in remission. He doesn't, you know, Tuco isn't an issue anymore. Like, he can sort of be out of this life, I think. And I think that's sort of where that defense stops. And it's just sort of the adrenaline sort of gets him back. And I mean, he misses the birth of his child to get Gus some meth. Yeah, I think that's sort of where he definitely turns from, you can sort of stop justifying it as he's just helping his family. Like, there's definite, he definitely gets some sort of kick out of this for sure.
Okay. What about, just trying to think of other characters that might be bad that people seem to like anyway.
Well, my problem with the characters on the show, just in general, is that pretty much every character, with maybe the exception of Gus and Walt Jr., like, every character is faced with a series of decisions, and in every possible scenario, every character chooses just something that's just so illogically, so illogical, and just clearly the wrong choice, you know, and like any given...
Against their best interests or morally?
Yeah, yeah, both against their own best interests and or morally, you know, like, I'm sure there are some that covered up, and... That was one of the things that just drove me crazy about the show is that, and I understand that this is sort of like a different kind of world in that, you know, it's different from regular TV in that not every character is going to act logically because our hero is a villain, you know, and that's sort of the way the show's set up. But that's one of the things that drives me crazy. And I think that's a big reason why I find so many of these characters unlikable.
Well, I know. And I was big on trying to get you to watch this show.
Yep.
And then I was, you know, around you when you started getting into it, and it was a very frustrating experience.
Oh,
for you.
Very
it,
so. Very
it wasn't
so.
Like, oh, this show's bad. Okay, I'm not going to watch it. Walk away. Kind of got hooked a little bit. I know you're not, you know, crazy meth addicted to it and love.
Yeah,
it
I watched it over the span of like August through December of last year. So yeah. Like, I did not go through it quickly.
Yeah, and it was, I don't know, you would seem to go through it very begrudgingly the whole time.
Yeah.
And just very frustrated that people would make such decisions.
Yeah, exactly.
You like Saul, though? Saul Goodman?
I don't like him, you know, like, he's, I don't know, I think he's funny. I like Bob Odenkirk, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm not going to call Saul likable.
Yeah, well, I guess, I don't know, because I got you into this show, I always feel... that I was part of getting you into the show, I always feel that I should defend it a little bit. I mean, our trade-off was kind of I watched The Wire and you watched this.
Yeah.
So, and I love The Wire a whole lot.
I'm happy I've seen this show and I'm gonna watch the rest of it. Like, if I hated it, like, if I found nothing worth watching in it, I would have stopped watching, you know? But I do like it. I, you know, it's probably in the 25 best shows I've ever seen, you know? But, yeah. I'm not here to just say this is a terrible show. I think it does some things exceptionally and some things just very frustratingly. And, you know, that's just my opinion. But
yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. I love Saul Goodman a lot. I'm probably a bigger Bob Odenkirk fan than you are, too.
Yes, you
so
are.
It's
yeah.
going to be hard for me to separate them. But I think that character is great. Like, just the greasiest slimeball lawyer who is still very, very funny.
And he's like the closest to Walt in that... he's more of a caricature than anything, you know, like, Walt is like this weird, not human type of person. And I think Saul is just like that, you know, is this very, he's almost like a device for comedy, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, they're both smart, but, make some bad decisions and are just greasy human beings.
Yeah, exactly.
Badger, you like Badger?
Yeah, I do like Badger.
Everyone likes Badger.
Yeah, it's like, how can you hate a guy with that voice, you know?
The Constitution of America. And DJ Squalls is in that scene, so you have to
like... Oh yeah, the DJ Squalls stuff is really great. I like that episode.
Oh, that's a fantastic scene, those guys on the bench.
Yeah.
I like Hank a lot. I think Hank's good, and he seems kind of like a character that we've seen a lot, but something about him, I don't know, maybe it's the performance, but something seems very sincere about him to me.
Okay.
Like something very, I don't know, enjoyable. That scene where Walt starts giving Walt Jr. that tequila shot in front of Hank.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a really good scene and he plays very well.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And Tuco, probably another caricature, a little over the top, but still enjoyable.
Yeah. Travis and I, like, the actor that plays Tuco is somebody that shows up as, like, you know, the eighth gangster in so many movies over, like, a course of three decades. Like, I think the biggest role I could think of before Breaking Bad was Training Day. He's one of the guys that tries to drown Ethan Hawke in the bathtub.
And he's had his shit pushed in.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention that, but yeah. And then, like, Travis and I were watching an old Seagal movie out for Justice the other day, and Tuco's in that as, like, the 18th gangster, and that's in, like, 1990, so he's been around for a bit. But I like him as Tuco as well. I think he's good.
I like him. Did you think it was possible for you to like Anna Gunn more in this show than you did in Deadwood?
Well, I mean, Anna Gunn is kind of the reason, like, Anna Gunn shows up in Deadwood and I stopped watching. Like, that's what happens. Like, I've watched the first season and the first few episodes of season two of Deadwood twice. And both times it's when I've just sort of fallen out of watching it is when Anna Gunn shows up.
That's funny to me because she's such a small character in that show.
I know. No, and it's just by chance. And I only sort of realized that once I realized how much I hate Skylar. but yeah, no, because Deadwood, I love the first season of Deadwood. I'd put it up there against anything, but I've just never been able to get through after that. But yeah, I believe it is the curse of Anna Gunn.
I love how much hate there is for Skylar. Like, universal hate for this character.
Well, she's so unlikable. And she does so many things that are just, like, just in any show will make you hate a character. You know, like, I think it's in the second, was it the second or third season where she has sex with Ted and then, like, just stares right in the face of the character that most people like the most and says, I cheated on you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I am
too. Yeah, exactly. even though, you know, I think she's got totally valid reasons to do so. But, yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. I'm kind of with everybody that I don't like her and I find her annoying and I understand her function in the show and all that, but just don't like her. Yeah, someone just wrote out a list of all the shit she's had to go through. Like, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, it is absurd the stuff she goes through in the course of this show.
And she's in control of almost none of it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when she does try to get control, everyone just kind of jumps on her for being a ball buster and Walt Jr. calls her a bitch. Like,
well, and that's one of the things I liked about season four, or parts of season four, is that Skylar, you know, I mean, towards the end of the season, she makes some horrible decisions. But when she's like, okay, we're doing, like, she really pushes forward on the car wash thing. And, like, that's all very smart decision-making on Skylar's part. You know, like, she's correct. And she really, like, there's a few episodes there where I'm just like, yeah, go Skylar. You know, like, she's just making correct decisions left and right. And, yeah, so I was happy that they gave her a bit of a reprieve.
But then she got fat.
I think this is already post-pregnancy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You mean you didn't think Walt should get the laser tag?
Well, as a child of the 80s who grew up in the 90s, I'm always rooting for laser tag. So we'll just put it that way.
How much do you like Gus?
I like him. I mean, again, he is sort of a caricature a lot of times, but he is also one of the few characters that consistently makes logical decisions, and I like that about him.
Yeah, he is like maybe a little over the top of how cold and calculating he is, but he's just that. And I don't think we get that better than in Box Cutter when he very slowly and deliberately takes off and folds his jacket and then just slits that guy's throat in front of Walt and Jesse.
Absolutely.
Like, that is the scene that just sums up Gus perfectly to me. Like,
exactly.
So smooth, so cold.
And I mean, we've had a season and a half. Like, that's the first episode of season four, I think. Yeah, it's first episode of season four. And we've had so much Gus up to that point, and it's just sort of like, and then Gus makes you go, oh shit, Gus does that. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Have you heard the Gus being gay theory?
No.
Have you come across that?
Nope. I don't read a lot about this show.
Yeah, no, not as much as I do, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. You're interested.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And there's that flashback where he and his business partner, do you remember that? By the pool in Mexico, he gets killed. Yeah.
Is it by Stephen Bauer or is it by Salamanca?
It's by Salamanca.
Okay. And Stephen Bauer is somehow a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're,
I forget his character's name, but he played Manolo in Scarface.
Yes.
Don Eladio is his name. Yeah.
Yeah. Another Scarface reference. They lean on Scarface a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought that was interesting. They kind of, people say that, you know, it wasn't just his business partner. That's not why he's so upset. It's because they had a relationship going. We see Gus mention that he has a wife and kids, but they're never seen. Mm-hmm. We go to his house and it doesn't look like there's anybody but him there. And then some other people have made some kind of more stereotypical gay joke justifications for why he might be gay that I'm not going to get into.
Yep.
But I find it interesting. And like, it's weird because, like, I was just reading someone from GLAAD. What is that? Gay Lesbian Alliance something?
Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation.
Yeah, I got 60% of that.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting because they said it might be good for, you know, the gay and lesbian community if this was a gay character. And, you know, it's funny to me that, you know, they would want him on their side because he's such a cold, calculating character who's so, you know, money driven and selfish, it seems. But, you know, I guess the point is that, you know, gay and lesbians can be anybody.
Like, yeah,
it's not that's, you know, they're not saying, oh, we want evil ones. It's just, you know, it can be anybody. And I think it would be cool if the show ended up making that clear and that they had that character be homosexual and it be completely unrelated to the plot. Because normally if there's a gay character on any show, it's kind of a device, like there's a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think it would be cool if it was separate like this and it was a character that I don't think people would ever, you know, assume that about.
Yeah, I think sort of the counterpoint to that is if, let's say, you know, Gus is gay, nothing else changes, but we know definitely that Gus is gay. Then isn't he the only gay character on the show, and also like debatably the most villainous? That it's could sort of be like you're vilifying gay people, you know, like you could always sort of turn it. And that, I mean, that is something that's just a tricky, you know, gray area to navigate around. But that's just sort of the counterpoint to that, I think.
Yeah, no, I think so. And that's kind of where I went immediately when I started hearing that people suspected that he was gay. That was the first thing that jumped into my head. Oh, the worst person on the show is the gay one. But I should have got the name of that person who wrote that article about, you know, considering it. But and I see your point how some people could take it as really negative. But I like the idea of it. Like, I think it's positive in a weird, twisted way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I can see it go both ways for sure.
Yeah.
But you never want, I don't know. Yeah. Because, I mean, he's not stereotypically gay. Particularly, so you don't have to worry about him being just the flamboyant gay villain, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I definitely see both sides of that argument, for sure.
Yeah. Both sides of it, like his melty face.
There, nice segue.
Is that your least favorite part in the show so far, at least visually?
I guess visually, yeah. I mean, I don't hate it. You hate it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think there are a lot of unrealistic things in this show. That's probably the most unrealistic, but it's not like this is a show that hinges on uber realism for four seasons and then we get that. But yeah, it's just sort of, I don't know. It's not great. Why don't you talk about it? Cause I know you really hate it.
No, it bugs me a lot. And again, doing more reading than you do and watching this, you know, as it came out. But I guess by maybe season four, you were watching it as it came out?
No, I was I will be watching season five as it airs. But
not the first time you really caught up with it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that a picture of him with the half-melted face adjusting his tie was leaked. And many people on the internet, myself included, said, oh, there's no way this is actually from Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. And again, I know it's not the most, like, 100% realistic show, but it just looked so goofy. And I was like, oh, well, that's not a thing. And if it is, that really, really sucks.
Yeah.
And it ended up being that way. And I was really much more upset about how it looked than the fact that I had it spoiled.
Like, yes.
When the bomb and stuff was coming, I was like, oh, okay, well, they got that right. But this, no.
Yeah.
Just not a fan of it.
Yeah, I think my justification for it, or how, you know, it was probably justified in the writer's room, is that they wanted to see a definitive Gus death, like see his corpse, like this guy's not coming back, you know, like that was sort of the thinking, I think, you know, whether it worked in execution.
I,
yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think he's dead, but I don't think that that 100% seals it. Like, I really don't think a human would survive that. I'm not trying to say that Gus is going to pop up in season 5, but if your goal was just to make sure he was dead, to have him walk around and adjust his tie before falling over out of frame, I think there's a lot more definitive ways to do that.
Yep, that's fair. No, I'm just trying to give them a justification, but yeah.
You always defending Breaking Bad.
You know me. but I really like the build up to that scene. I rewatched that episode and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's a lot of episodes.
The music.
Particularly. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. The music where he's like walking up to the meeting and stuff like that. Just that whole sequence is really well done.
Yeah, and there's a lot of episodes, I think, particularly in season 4 that end really, really well. And
yeah,
episode.
Yeah, season 4 is definitely my favorite season because it's the one with the most things that I enjoy about the show. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's the show, as you said, is not 100% realistic.
Mm-mm.
Any particular leaps in logic or just...
Well, I mean there's plenty of stuff, you know, like I mean, and it's always present, like the exploding meth in Tuco's office and like the 5th episode of the show.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some backing for that in science, but the way Walt just sort of walks out, you know, like after throwing this allegedly exploding meth right on the floor underneath him, you know.
Yeah.
But I'll cover my face with my arm.
Okay.
Everything's fine. I don't know, like the twins are ridiculous.
Yeah. That to me, it's like probably, I mean, I could probably pick out individual moments like Gus's melty face that I like less and yeah. his T-1000 shit, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
But for how long the twins go on for, how silly it is, how out of place it seems in this already not 100% realistic show.
Yeah.
Pound for pound, it's the goofiest thing that I would quickly cut out of this show if it were up to me.
Definitely.
And they just kill so many people so recklessly on the way there. And yeah. Doesn't make sense.
Yep. It does let us have that that shootout with Hank, though, which I like.
Yeah, that's actually really good. And it's like that's the part that's kind of their most realistic segment. Even yeah. though the goofy things and that with the axe and the bullet and stuff.
Yep.
But that part I really like. And I like Walt being put in that spot where he has to help out but can't really get involved. Yeah, everything about that's cool. And I like how it's in the middle of the day. I always like a lot of when they do action scenes that, you know, it's so bright out. Like, I think we talked about this a lot with Memento, but when you have that like grit and violence in a very clear, bright, sunny, open area,
mm-hmm.
something that really drives that home that this is actually happening to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what about the plane crashing?
Was that that was my other one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too much?
It's not too much. And like I said, like, I mean, I'm fine with anything unrealistic happening in the show because I've never really felt it's super realistic, you know? I don't feel like it's too much for Breaking Bad. I think it's fine. It's unrealistic, but I think it works for the show.
But it wouldn't work in The Wire?
No. No, it would not.
Well, that's, I don't know. I think because of the drug-related nature of the show, because you and I kind of had a trade-off about watching them, since they're not that far apart in time and they're both kind of in this category of kind of the modern classics.
Yep.
Like The Sopranos, Mad Men, The Wire, and Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
I think are the big four that people can agree on.
You said Mad Men.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And is there anything else that's up there? Those seem to be kind of the pillar of the golden age of television that a lot of people say we're in, just cable shows that did it really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, there are things people, yeah, I think those are the four. You can make arguments for various fringe shows, but I mean
yeah, Fringe is good.
Yeah. but yeah, I think those are the main four that are the most universally well liked.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think The Wire and Breaking Bad are closest related, so I always find myself comparing the two.
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, because of a lot of different reasons, really. So yeah, this is just such a cartoon compared to The Wire.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like it's such less realistic. And The Wire is so all encompassing. Like it's every part of Baltimore, where this is, you know, more of a classic story of just one dude's journey.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And whereas Breaking Bad wants to be more entertaining than realistic, like The Wire was just obsessed with realism.
Yeah, absolutely. And even visually, it yes. looks The Wire is it's kind of like a documentary more than a TV show, you know? Like it's very utilitarian, I find, in the way it's shot. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that it's ugly, but
much more simply staged.
Exactly, and Breaking Bad is just a very polished show visually. Like these are shots that are set up, like some of these long establishing shots, you know, with the pink teddy bear and the eyeball, and
yep.
like
Schindler's
this.
List. What up?
Yeah, these are things that we're not going to see in The Wire, and I'm happy it's not there.
Yeah,
it does add that level of realism.
Yeah.
Anything about the comparison of those two shows, or?
Yeah, I think they're sort of lumped together because two similarly well liked shows by two similar groups of people. The same people like The Wire, like Breaking Bad, typically. But it's just, and they're both about drugs, drugs and crime. And but I mean, beyond that, there's not a whole lot. The Wire deals with so many people, whereas Breaking Bad is sort of this focus, particularly on two people. But at most, you have five main characters. Yeah, that's totally different from The Wire, and just it's so much Breaking
Bad
is
a thousand main characters.
Yeah, exactly. And Breaking Bad is just in general such a more cinematic show, whereas The Wire wants to make you feel like you are present in its story, you know.
Yeah. One of the things that I was really leaning on when trying to sell you this show was the visuals, because
yes.
you like the visual, like you it's probably the millionth time we've said this, or I've said this at least. But you are much more focused on the visual things in TV and film than I am.
Yeah.
And I get some cinematography stuff, but it strikes me less often mm-hmm. than you that yep. it's really good or really bad. And this one I noticed. So for me to notice it, it's probably doing something very right. So that's kind of what I use to try to convince you to watch it.
Yeah.
Is that a proper assessment that there is something going on visually, or?
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes when I watch it, I feel like maybe I'm just being fooled. Like maybe all you need to do is have a slow motion shot of a pink teddy bear before the scene. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be called a visually stunning show. Like, are they just taking a little bit of time and saying, okay, we did this kind of artsy shot, even if it's, there wasn't much behind it, but we did it. So we're that clever, good visual show, or is it there in even the way that other scenes are shot in the narrative and the dialogue?
It is. It's there in pretty much every scene. This is the most beautiful, photography wise, this is the most beautiful television show I've ever seen. And it, like second place is not close. It's just like, it feels like a film, sort of, and all of the establishing shots are beautiful. They use so much of the lower third when Walt and Jesse, like, or anybody is in the desert, which the lower third of the screen, you know, just the bottom third, and then the upper two thirds will just be sky, you know. And we talked about this on Moonrise
Skyler?
Kingdom. No, yeah, just
Dick
a giant
Skyler occupying two thirds yeah. of the screen.
But yeah, no, it's fine. And like, say like the RV will just be the bottom third of the screen, and then the rest is just sort of like the sky and just all these beautiful shots. And I was listening to Michael Slovis, who's the director of photography from season two onward. It's just sort of like they have so much time to shoot an episode, but Vince Gilligan is always sort of like, get as, you know, shoot as well as you can. It feels like a show that it's like, we have this amount of time, get whatever shot you can, get me the most beautiful shot possible. And like, they break lighting rules, like a lot of characters are in silhouette a lot of times. They will use the lighting, like in a scene that's inside of the car, they'll adjust the cameras to the lighting outside of the car, so we're only seeing like Jesse making a phone call, but we're barely seeing any definition on his face. It's just a little bit of light. And just this really dramatic cinematic style. And the majority of the show is shot handheld, even those establishing shots. And that's very much a time thing. Like Michael Slovis says that the first season, again, before he worked on it, had to be shot 80 to 85% handheld just because of how little money and time they had to shoot each episode. And like, that's why pretty much the whole show is shot handheld, is because of the restrictions they have. And that's the way most styles get developed, is like, you have ideas that you want to do, and then it's like, what do we have time and money to do? Yeah. And basically, the first season of any show is what sets out the style for the rest of the show. And that's why it's, the pilot, the director of photography on the pilot was John Toll, who is a well-known, cinematographer in Hollywood. He shot, The Thin Red Line is the first thing that's coming to mind, which is a gorgeous movie. And, anytime you're good enough to be Terrence Malick's director of photography, you're doing something right. And I mean, the first shot of Breaking Bad's pilot is just that, those pants, I think, blowing in slow motion, in the wind. And I mean, right from there, you're just sort of like, okay, this is going to be a good looking show. And just the contrast between the desert and the sky, like the orange to blue, it's a great show as far as visuals.
Yeah. You talked about using the lower third and a lot of the desert shots. The show set in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yes.
Is this a Western or a neo-Western?
It's, I have trouble defining it as a Western or neo-Western. Certainly very Western inspired in its staging, the way it'll do any sort of showdown or face off, with the editing, the music, like Gus walking to his death, with Salamanca. Even just that music just sounds like it feels like sort of a cheaper version of music that you would hear in a Western in a similar scene. Yeah. And I mean, that's very much a stand up or sorry, you know, like sort of a showdown that he's going to. It's just sort of like different in that they're not drawing guns. One is dinging a bell and making them all explode.
That classic Western stereo.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of, you know, mountainous backgrounds and also plains as well. Cause apparently, again, according to Michael Slovis, Albuquerque, like one, if you look one way, it's all just plains, just total flatland. You turn around, it's all these mountains. And
I hope I'm not just getting fooled by the fact that it's takes place near a desert, but there.
No, it's very Western inspired for sure.
Yeah, as you listed there, so definitely some other things.
And it's also very Vince Gilligan, like when the show was starting out, really. When Michael Slovis was hired, he really pointed Michael Slovis to The French Connection, a movie we talked about earlier for having like this really, really great handheld style. And that's sort of part of the things, one of the things that set up Breaking Bad's aesthetic. And it really tries to go with sort of a more, when the auteur theory was more present in Hollywood film, like it's really influenced by American films of the 60s and 70s. And that's something Vince Gilligan has said publicly as well.
Okay. Yeah. Another thing about the location, this is something someone pointed out to me, but this is the first show that of those four great shows that we were talking about earlier, Mad Men, The Wire, and The Sopranos, that takes place in a red state.
Okay.
Those other shows are all, you know, red state, blue state, like the conservative Republican part of the country.
Yep.
Those are all, I mean, The Wire is Baltimore, Sopranos is Jersey, New York. And Mad Men is New York again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, New York City. Do you find any politics in this show at all? Or is this just a story? Is the location kind of irrelevant?
Well, the location is very relevant. As far as I think what you're discussing, I think it's less important. I think one of the key reasons it's it has to be, you know, Albuquerque is border reasons, right? Like it's fairly south. I think Vince Gilligan really tries to shy away from any sort of political stuff. I think he has no interest in that.
Okay.
I think inherently in anything that involves the drug war, you have to, like, you can analyze a show politically for sure. But I really don't think it's intended.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know who does see some politics in here? Is our Cranny B.
The Cranny B? Okay.
Yeah. Did you see him on Real Time?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he's on there and he talks about I mean, it's a political talk show, so...
Yeah, it's Bill Maher's talk show.
Yeah, so you're going to get the political take on whatever it is you're discussing. And he... B-Cran is a liberal. I think he would have no problem admitting to that from everything I've heard him say politically. And especially on that real-time performance, he was really leaning on how this show could be and should be, it seems to him, taken for a liberal message. It starts off, I mean, what sets everything in motion is that he doesn't have money. That's the issue. He has cancer and he's worried about his family not having enough money. Even before the cancer, he's struggling with money. You know, he's got a second job. He works full time as a teacher, but then he goes and works at Eyebrows Car Wash.
Yep.
So that it's already an issue even before the cancer. And, you know, Cranston was reading into that as...
It's pronounced B-Cran.
B-Cran, sorry. he was reading into that as, you know, teachers not being cared for and public servants not being cared for, which is, you know, traditionally a left issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the cancer kicks in, he doesn't have enough treatment. And again, he was kind of saying how, you know, universal healthcare is not something they have in the States. Maybe if they did, he wouldn't be forced into this, you know, awful situation. And, you know, between treatment of teachers, the lack of a healthcare system, these are the things that push Walter White into doing all these horrible, violent, criminal things.
Yeah.
The illegal, you know, the issue of criminalizing drugs or having drugs be so criminal, the war on drugs altogether, you know, all the money and how harshly, you know, drug offenders are treated, is what escalates a lot of situations in this. All the violence between gangs, that we see, especially in season 1 and 2 and the cartels in, 3 and 4 is, you know, a result of this war on drugs and, having them be illegal makes it, you know, a criminal realm instead of what could just be a government or a corporate realm, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, I certainly didn't see all that stuff watching it the first time. Mm-hmm. And you're right that I don't think this is, you know, Vince Gilligan's, you know, leftist tirade. It's his anti-Bush stuff out into the world.
Yeah, Vince Gilligan and David Simon are dramatically different people.
Yeah.
David Simon being the creator of The Wire.
Yeah. any predictions for season 5 now that you say you're gonna watch?
Now that I like it was never in
doubt. now that I've changed your mind over this last hour.
No, I predictions for season 5. I don't know. I don't think so. I think Walter will die.
Oh yeah. How?
I don't know. I do think Walter has to die. I think that's in everything I know about Vince Gilligan, I feel like, because he says that he likes to believe that karma exists and he doesn't like living in a world where karma isn't, you know, something that, you know, bad people have to deal with.
Yeah.
And that's just sort of his personality. So I feel like we're going to have Walter build up a lot of bad karma and then have to die.
And what happens to Jesse?
I hope he lives.
Or does he become Heisenberg?
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, I feel like I'm right about Walt. I have no idea what's going to happen with Jesse. And that's, again, why I will continue to watch.
Do you remember that music video at the start of one of the episodes? The episode Negro E Azul?
I remember there being a music video, definitely.
Okay. Watch that clip again. And when they show Heisenberg, you know, they always show him with the hat and the jacket. Have a look at that person. Because it looks a lot like it's Jesse.
Okay.
Like, a lot. And if, you know, maybe they were just shooting the video and B-Cran wasn't around, they had to find someone to fill in for him. You know, just because it's not a B-Cran, that doesn't mean, you know, you can, you know, have to read into it. But it looks so much like Jesse that, you know, it's not an old man with a goatee. It's a young, clean-shaven man.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are suspecting that season 5 is Walt and Jesse coming head to head and Jesse winning. And
I think they will definitely come head to head for sure.
Yeah, that seems to be the, you know, logically next step.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, they've gone head to head before. Jesse's only getting more powerful as we discussed.
Yeah,
and
they've always had a very contentious relationship.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I suppose so. But yeah, no, I'm interested to watch the fifth and sixth season. I'm not getting into that bullshit of calling it a two-part season spread over 2 years, but yeah, it's gonna be interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Men. Be sure.
You're welcome.
No, you partook in the MacGuffin Men. You only listened to half, and the other half of the time you were talking.
I can hear myself. It's not
okay. All right. Thank you, listeners at home or on your iPod, you know, transporting to work, whatever.
You still haven't canceled me out of this.
Are you home. Driving to work right now?
No, but I'm at home.
Okay. Okay,
I'll shut up now.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for
shutting up. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. In a day or two, we'll have a video podcast on the social network up that you should check out. We've also got our older ones on Michael Bay, Judd Apatow movies, trailers, and 500 Days of Summer. And we've also got plenty of other audio podcasts to listen to. We've got some good audio podcasts coming up. We've got Spider-Man. We've got Christopher Nolan's Batman. So we're going to do some podcasts on those. And a variety of other cool things coming throughout the summer. So be sure to check back with us. Subscribe on iTunes. Rate us on iTunes. Basically, tell your friends. So yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, or follow us on Twitter @themacguffinmen.